Everyone, Carl Donnelly here. I don't know how I'm addressing the camera like it's a show.
Yeah, it really feels like you're about to do like a, you know, like the evening news when they go to an event.
yeah. Just out. Yeah, I'm out about. Here I am at the Melbourne Comedy Festival, guys. This is TVI episode. I believe it's episode 191 of our podcast.
Oh my, wonderful stuff.
We were nine away.
And if you,
oh, damn, so you know, always the bridesmaid, never a bride.
If you cut it down to the gold, I reckon we've done 2 hours tops. It's a lot of filler, me and Julian.
Are those all Julian one-liners?
Yeah.
Come out of nowhere and yeah. They're a real treat and will be lacking during the next
They will
hour.
Be, sadly. There's no, somebody, Rebecca Austin, mm-hmm. Your colleague,
my colleague
and our
yes.
friend.
Yeah. Has Rebecca ever been on a podcast? I just assume she must have been, but that would there's no podcast for comedy industry individuals.
Well, I'm here.
That's
well,
true.
Yeah, that's
but you also do a lot of podcasting and like we're a broadcaster.
Well, that's what I was going to describe you as. So guests, people, you've been on it before, John Hastings. I don't know which one of you is the Julian sub in. I'll describe Julian to you. But Kyron Wheatley, podcaster, broadcaster, comedy club proprietor, and comedy adjacent.
Comedy
is that the
adjacent?
Right way of describing you?
I'd say so. These days,
yeah.
These days,
you wear many hats.
Yeah, it's a shame, isn't it? When you have to come with a list, I think it's just cleaner.
Yeah.
Just to be
yes.
comedian.
Because obviously, what they're always everyone's complimentary about jack of all trades. Everyone speaks so highly of them.
I didn't know about the master of none portion of that saying until.
Actually, you thought it was a compliment
about you.
I was probably about
Hastings.
20, and then someone was like,
and you found out as an insult,
master of none. I was like, what's this master of none crap? I thought I was Jack, baby.
Oh man. Yeah, sorry. It is an insult. But also, it's better than being like a jack of no trades and also master of none.
Yeah, that's true.
Or a master of one bad trade. Mm. No one ever thinks about the ins and outs
like comedy,
of this.
For example.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. No one wants to be a master of comedy.
Like, I was thinking about this yesterday while I was tying my shoes. Imagine being the best person at tying shoes. Like, that's just, you have one skill, that's your one talent.
Yeah.
Like, you woo people to sexual scenario. Like, I don't want to be weird. You should see me lace up a pair of trainers. Like, that would be such a bizarre life to lead of, like...
Well, does Twyla have...
She's very good. You know, she's actually very advanced
Velcro
at things like getting dressed.
Mm-hmm.
For a 2.5-year-old, she can do it herself. She gets socks on herself, tying laces. She's not there yet.
Wow. Yeah.
She has an incredible trick that I taught her once and thought this will take 10 goes to get her to get it, which is how to put a jacket on or a rucksack where you... Have you ever seen this where you turn it? So hang on, you've got it. Imagine you hold your jacket up in front of you.
Yeah.
And then you turn it and put it sort of facing away, face up. And then you put your arms through and you go and flip it over your head and it goes on. I taught her that once and she now does it every time without a fader.
Wow.
And I didn't even teach her that that's how you do it with a rucksack and she worked that out herself.
Ooh.
Does she think that's just the way everyone's putting on jackets?
Mm. That is true, actually. No, I don't think so. I've only ever done it in front of her when I taught it to her that one time.
Will you teach her that that's how Martin Sheen puts on his jackets? Because he injured his shoulder filming Apocalypse Now, so he has to put it on weirdly.
Oh, is that how he does it?
Yeah, that's how he...
Because you mentioned this to me. Was it you to mention it? Somebody mentioned it to me about the West Wing. In the West Wing, apparently, Martin Sheen has a specific way of putting on his jacket.
That's a really weird way of putting on his jacket.
And is it that way?
It is that way.
Over the head.
Yeah. It's over the head with this weird
maneuver. I've never seen the West Wing.
It is more unrealistic than Star Wars in terms of how a government operates.
Right, okay.
But it is so fun. Like, it's just a bunch of, mates having fun, snappy conversations.
And they pop
to the basement and are just like, what about the vote? It went well. Yeah. Da-da-da-da-da! Like, they portray working at the White House as just
like a real laugh.
Yeah, you just have a lot of just fun chats with like a grumpy man, and then the president comes and is just very reasonable about the Bible.
My view of it, as having not seen it but seen little clips, is that a lot of the conversation takes place walking down hallways.
That's true.
But I don't know how true that is in politics.
I love that on the on the day that perhaps the most famous episode of television ever to be released, just like was released yesterday, Succession. We're here talking about
please, a TV no show one from talk about
no spoilers. 1999.
Are you up to speed?
Yeah,
I am. So not
I'm
up
not.
To speed.
I've not started this
and like,
season yet.
Four people messaged me with one person literally wrote, "I know you love Succession, and so here, and I'm going to give you some spoilers." And
no,
I literally just
know.
Deleted them from WhatsApp.
Yeah,
I'm like,
block.
What do you do? I have a flight back to Los Angeles,
oh
and I will
God.
Be spending it high on various marijuana products, watching Brian Cox say fuck off to people, and then Jerry getting fucking Macaulay's son to have
I
a little J off in a bathroom.
But there was an episode of one of the cast members on Stephen Colbert's show.
There you go. This is what
and
I want to talk
said,
about.
He opened it by saying, warning, the episode came out yesterday. Spoiler. He's like, I don't normally start interviews like this, but spoiler alert for those watching at home. But of course, all those watching in the room.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would get
no,
it.
Had no
rude.
Choice. And you could audibly hear everyone go,
oh. Just leave. The whole audience
would
leave.
Yeah, just leave. What I also don't like specifically about Succession is it's a show that I don't know how people watch it week to week because it starts every season. I watch the first episode and go, they fucked it. They fucked it. This is the worst. And then by the last episode, I'm like, these fuckers did it again. This is television, baby.
But I'm going to say, I think they're not. This isn't. I think there is obviously something is going to happen in this season that we've been waiting for the whole time. I'm not an idiot. Everyone, we know enough about the story and the writing process. The thing that is meant to be happening.
It's called like people. That I can guess what's coming, and people that and only by people's abject shock in a way where if I knew what would happen, I would be like, how are you shocked?
Yeah. So there is that. I mean, that's not a spoiler to think that will probably have happened or will happen
at some point.
Or I don't know if it's happened yet.
I don't
want to know when. I don't want to know what part of the season.
Like, there's no television I get excited for anymore. You know what I mean? Like, this is the last one where it's like.
And it feels like the world is getting excited at the same time
about
this.
Yes.
Which is exciting.
Yeah.
And it's made even better by the fact that it's all about a show where I think my favorite episode, a man has cum spat back in his mouth. And that just can't be. Like, the fact that my mom and I text about that show and we've just ignored
that episode
is a real. It's a real show of maturity within the Hastings family.
I watched the first episode of Beef last night. Have you heard about Beef?
I've seen it pop up. Netflix wants me to watch it.
Very good. Like, it's a very. It really sets it up like, oh, this is going to be very well made, but very fun as a concept. Like, it just starts with a road rage exchange between two very different people. One's quite a struggling. Like builder who is just like his family have had to basically move back to Korea because he got involved in a scam and ruined their business, so that he's now got this pressure of like trying to repair his parents' lives because he's the reason they've had to move back to Korea. and then it's a very high powered corporate sort of art dealer type, and they just two very different worlds, and they just collide in a road rage incident and just start this proper, like, I described it as a war of attrition on WhatsApp. I said that like I described it on the ABC News.
Where you're featured
at 6:30. When we were talking, you asked what it was like, and I said, you can feel that it's going to go big. Every episode is going to escalate to how they are trying to get back at each other, and it's going to be so petty, but also both characters are so stressed, and, you know, it's got that...
It's got Ali Wong.
It's got Ali Wong, but I'm trying to think. There was a show I've watched recently that is so stressful to watch, and I can't remember what it was. Like,
it's
on
TV these days.
I know
This is exactly... I watched the first episode of Beef on your recommendation.
Yeah.
And I had to shut it off. Not that it wasn't quality. It's just that level of stress. And also, I've been in a feud with a neighbor, and it is...
I am not surprised.
I had nothing to do
I'm
with
not
it.
Either.
They were fucking nuts. I didn't initiate it. They were crazy... Like, it was so, like,
what did you do?
What did you do, John?
I was a student living in an apartment, and these were two people in their 40s that had really sad lives working in, I believe, a glue factory and being unemployed. And they, like, one time, for example, they thought I was always making noise, but they were crazy. It was the noise of the street. So one time I was studying in my apartment, and he came down, and I knew it was going to happen because I heard a homeless guy yelling at a guy on a bike. And he came down and went, "You're watching that bike racing program with the loud commentator."
Oh,
and I went,
God.
No. And then it all escalated to at 6 o'clock in the morning, he accused me of physically attacking his wife. Now, I don't know what had just happened, but I assume 'twasn't me. Yeah. And before I could call the police, the crazy Greek landlord who lived in the basement with his three scary sons heard him screaming at me, and he came up in old manny pajamas with the pocket and the pockets in the trousers.
My father-in-law wears those.
Absolutely. Oh. It's an exceptional look. It's even made better when it is a confused man. Like, literally, he peeked out and was like, was that man yelling at you for this?
Yeah.
Montreal rental laws were so much, and he was like, it'll be taken care of. And then I heard him slam the door of his apartment. Then it was reopened, and many footsteps went up the stairs. No. And then just through, I just heard, and then I heard malacca, which is a Greek word that means bad things.
Yeah, I know, but I know the word malacca.
And then the steps came down, and then him and his sons were at my door, and then he'll be out by this afternoon with his wife. And I was like, how did you do that? Like, did you break his lease? Wow. And he was just like, you don't worry how I did that, but I did it. And then he went down. Yeah.
And then he went back to a basement.
He went back to his basement. That was the best landlord I ever had in my entire life. He had made little birdhouses around the apartment because he was like, wouldn't it be nice if there's like birds and nature around this apartment? Yes. It was across from like a gas station in kind of a weird neighborhood. And it was this little lovely oasis. I would like stop by and see him after I moved out. I fucking loved that guy. That said, he did have a saw in his bedroom, which was like his apartment was also the workshop for the apartment. Like, this was a man who clearly had a wife who died. And he was just like, I'll just rent that apartment and I'll live here. And he did. And still a good man. So I couldn't enjoy Beef.
Oh, because
it brought all those emotions back.
Yes.
But watching it, I was like, he is right. This is like, this is a war. It also has a lovely comment on hustle culture, which I want to destroy. I hate it.
Yes. I've got a little sort of a side reference to it in my show this year about, you know, this idea that you've got to work really hard and that's the secret to life. And it's the opposite, isn't it? The secret to life is to do as little as possible until you die.
Yeah.
Have you ever had any neighborly issues?
The first thing to mind is that I was a witness in an attempted murder.
Oh my! Oh,
that counts as beef, I reckon.
Wheatley evidently is Latin for brings it with the stories. Go ahead.
We're sitting on attempted murder.
That's the best
Sydney
one.
Oh,
beef.
So it was from your house?
Yeah, we're sitting on the balcony and we were having a joint on the balcony, which is great.
Tell me more.
Which does throw out your testimony in court.
Well, obviously. I disagree, actually. A lot of studies have recently done that actually his awareness of a situation was actually peaked as opposed to...
Were these studies done by Cheech and Chong?
Certainly were. That is Dr. Cheech and Professor Chong, I'll have you know. Not the same guys. It's just an unfortunate coincidence. Maria Cheech and Robert Chong. The University of London, you booze-loving bastard. Just leave us hippies to our enjoyment.
Someone came out of the building.
You were smoking a jazz cigarette.
With friends who were up in Melbourne. This was in Sydney, and someone came out of the building opposite and was screaming, "I love you," and digging, seemingly to us. It looked like digging in their underwear in the park opposite.
That's not a good look.
Not good.
And our friends who were up were like, we should call someone. Mm. And I know this park quite well. And I was like, we should not. This is it. This is welcome. Welcome to Sydney.
Yes, yeah.
What part of Sydney did you...
Devonshire Street.
That's in the Cross, is that right?
I lived in the Cross as well, but this is before that. This is like Surrey Hills.
Oh, yeah.
But this is also like 12 years ago now, I guess. Or close to...
Okay, so great, because I was about to say, that whole area really feels like it was
lovely
spicy
now.
Before. Yeah, I've lived in a lot of those neighborhoods.
Yeah. Slowest tram in the world.
Yeah.
Idles up Devonshire Street. Well, that used to be a little rougher. And so he was digging away. And a friend said, we should call someone. I said, oh, no, I don't think we should. This is, he's on something. He'll be fine.
Yeah.
And then enough time passed where I thought, actually, maybe we should. And so we did. And we called an ambulance, but then the police arrived. So we're, punching out the little doobie there. And then immediately we're speaking to the police about what we've witnessed and what we've seen. Then the ambulance arrived. And then a second ambulance arrived. And I think when the second ambulance arrives...
Not good.
Not great.
Not great.
They've obviously got a piece of equipment.
Yes.
But they need to get to you quicker than you can get to the hospital.
Oh, God.
And so that's when we sort of felt quite bad that we hadn't called sooner. And but it, luckily, it was just an attempted murder.
Yeah.
Did survive.
Good.
But then we went to court.
Did you?
Yeah, I went to court and gave evidence.
Oh my god!
I've always wanted to do that. I could go through the metal detector, talk to like a vaguely overweight security gentleman. Oh, it's very
a little
fun.
Side get piece then as you go through.
Of course,
one out your bat, one out your sock.
Can you describe the man you saw? That guy. Oh, he looked like that guy.
So satisfying.
And did you actually identify him? Was it like, that is definitely the man?
No.
Or were you too far away?
We were definitely far too far.
Right, okay. Yeah,
we were there to describe the course of events, I think. Because then they pulled us all in, four of us. It was pretty open shut.
okay, that's the rundown of the court case.
Because what had happened is he'd gone to his, the perp had gone to his friend's house and had a shower, which is where they found him, bloody.
Oh, my God. Yeah. What was the weapon of choice?
Stabbing him with a pen.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's not good.
A crime of education.
What was fascinating was that...
But the fact he survived, I think, does disprove the old pen is mightier than the swords.
Your joke was much better than mine.
Get that one on the ground. Clip it now.
We were having a party at that house about a year later, and it was just the door was open so that people would come in, and there was someone at the door that I did not recognize. I said, "Oh, hi." I thought maybe one of my housemates had invited them, and he said, "Oh, the police said that one of the houses opposite this park called the ambulance and save," and I was like, "Oh, that was me."
Yeah.
I was just in a good mood.
Stone, mate, it's great.
But he was the victim.
And he was the victim.
Oh, that's fine. Sometimes it wasn't the the other guy.
And then I was stabbed 14 times with a pen.
I hate to interrupt, but I just want to clarify. It just says 5 on that display. Is that fine, or does that need to be counting up?
That's a terrific question, John.
Good. Oh, tell me, what have we done? Because it is the record button is on.
The record button is on.
But is it?
What I'll do is I'll stop it.
And then we'll
start again.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think but that's
and we'll see. Just see if it does the same thing.
Yeah.
We're off again.
Oh, so sorry
we
for
just
that.
Had a little minor interval because we
Do
thought we weren't
these?
Recording. No, we I tend to put so it out
you'll
semi.
Have either, you'll have 16 minutes or 45.
Yeah. No, we tend to put it out as live. Normally we only edit it if somebody says something, they afterwards go, that should never touch the ears of another human being.
Yeah.
But we just had to have a little intermission because we thought we weren't recording that first 16 minutes about murders.
Yes.
Luckily,
you just
we
made
were.
Me question whether I should have said that.
Oh, you're fine. Because I was going to say, I've also recently had to speak to the police while stoned off my ass because a woman jumped on stage and... There's a clip of it on my Instagram. But
where was it?
Wilmington, North Carolina, the home of Michael Jordan, I'll have
okay.
you know.
Okay, that's cool.
So their mall, I think.
Home or where he's from.
Where he's from.
He doesn't live there now.
Usually, very much not his home. And they all
I
are
think
like.
Think he did all right for himself.
They all are like, he doesn't really come back. And I'm like, yeah, man, he was a black man who grew up in the South in the 60s. I feel like he has some baggage.
What's happening now? That screen's going on standby.
That's just. Fucking, here
everything's
we
going on. I'm having
screen saver.
That said, Wilmington, lovely fucking, lovely little town. The South, what they don't tell you about the South of America, it is gorgeous and all the history is there. And the reason why America doesn't dwell in its history is quite crucially what that history entails.
I just adore the history of the South
of
America.
Oh, the history, the rich history.
It's up there with London, which just don't Google who this guy is on the statue. Just don't Google it. You're not going to be happy.
Yeah.
But, he invented the idea of killing black people. He's like, why did he get a statue? So I was on stage, and I had a little ding-dong with a heckler, and she ended up rushing the stage, and I just walked off the stage because America is a litigious place, and I was just like, I'm just not going to do
anywhere near
her. They ended up like grabbing her. On the way out, she punched a guy in the back of the head and took a swing at another bouncer.
Yeah.
And then her and her son, very crucially, jumped in a car.
Imagine going out with your mum on a night out and she punches someone in the head.
The footage what a
life.
The footage is one of has the saddest moment of the way how quickly and routinely he grabs her coat
it's like he's done that a thousand times.
Every
school parents' evening, he was having to just carry his mum's stuff home.
And so she had a fucking bash. Then they went to the emergency room and claimed that she had been attacked by the comedian at the audience at the comedy club.
By you?
By me? By Jackie? Jackie's a lover, not a fighter.
But luckily there was an old Greek man in the basement.
That's correct. He showed up again. Stavros to the rescue. No, there was just so many cameras. So, and like, it was a bit intense. And I was totally fine because it's very much not the first time someone's gotten on stage to attack me. Which they all were like, that's weird that this doesn't bother you. And I'm like, you guys had security. Yeah, I've had it where it's just me. Yeah. And I just have to figure it out.
Exactly.
But I didn't think, which is I started getting super baked on the porch. And then they were like, you know, the cops are coming to speak to you. And I was like, oh, when are they getting here? And then they're like a call from downstairs. Like, they're here now. And I was like, okay. And I just put it out. Didn't even do that. Like, he came up and I saw him kind of look towards the ashtray. And I could see in his mind being like, nah.
And
talked to me. And he was like, da-da-da. And the one thing you could tell I was stoned because when he said, so what happened? I started with, so the show began, and he went, just with me.
So I was born in 1985.
The year was 1985, and the world needed another comedian.
That, you said something to me very surprising last week, I think it was, as the owner of a comedy club.
Here we are.
You said no audience member has ever vomited in here. And I was shocked. And that says a lot about... No, but I was saying that as somebody who's, you know, done Edinburgh enough times and for gigs in, you know, the big clubs in London and in the UK on weekends. Obviously in America, like I've been to some gigs in New York that were quite rowdy and stuff. And, you know, I think I was shocked at it over how you've had this place now for 3 years?
Yeah, 3 years.
That you've never had an audience member vomit.
Maybe in the toilet. I think that's maybe they've done it privately. But not there hasn't been.
Yeah, that doesn't count. No, it doesn't count.
A dog has shat in the bar.
A what? A dog
has shat in the bar.
Your dog?
It was Eva. It was Michelle Brazier's dog.
Oh, yeah. Who is a service dog.
A guide dog ambassador, as it were.
She's very high up in the ranks.
Which is a guide dog, isn't it?
Yeah.
And they put a little coat on them and go around, and that's the one you can pat.
Fun fact about Eva, though, is the most, whatever this dog does, I want to be a part of. Like, it just has these eyes of like...
Yeah.
Don't you want to give me like $80?
I used to work for Guide Dogs. Guide Dogs
WA. Really?
Yeah.
They were training them in a park we were in earlier on. We went to a playground. Me, Hannah and Twyla, and Milo McCabe and his family. And there was there were guide dog training going on.
I
still will say, and this is one of my, I'd say, you know, when you see them things online, when it's like, what opinion do you hold that would, you know, be the most unpopular? And this is as a vegan. I still don't know where I sit morally with guide dogs. Like, it feels wrong, even though that's not a popular thing to say. Yeah. I can't help feel like they haven't signed up for this. Yeah. It's one of the opinions
but they
I've
don't
got.
Know what this is?
No, that's the thing. I suppose
they just think
it's,
they're going out for a walk.
Yeah, but it's like sheepdog. I'm like, I want to say to the farmer, you fucking do it. But
I
even though it's what, but it is what their instinct is. I know that's the thing. Sheepdog are essentially bred for that,
when you
should do it. But I don't know. Something in me goes like, I don't know.
When you put the little
vests
on them, or like the harness, they do go into like work mode.
Their uniform on.
Very like on the clock. Because there was, and you're not meant to put harnesses on dogs that aren't guide dogs. And
we had this. Because they'll just start trying to help blind people.
Yes.
And they're not trained for it. So it's very dangerous.
You've got just to give them a wild spaniel.
You've just got a pit bull is just getting a bit like, all right, I can do this.
I would just like if they trained pugs, because then it would just...
I have unprompted Twyla the first time she saw a pug and could speak, referred to it as a pig dog.
Spot on.
And it's just, that's exactly what they are.
Yeah, but put on like a backpack.
But now and again, she's said it now in, you know, a few times as the owner is there and can hear. Mm. And like, that's one thing. Kids don't not have a filter. Look, we were sat in Monk Bodhidharma in Balaclava. Have you been there for brunch? Mm. That's one of my favourite Melbourne brunch spots. We were sat there yesterday morning and Twyla was on my lap and we were eating pancakes. And there was a guy sat on a table next to me. And I like a lot of hipster Melbourne cafes, the tables are way too close to each other. Like, you might as well be eating with the people on the next table. And and she said, look at his funny bald head.
My mum was pregnant with me, apparently, in the waiting room. My brother looked over to a larger gentleman and said very loudly, Mum, is he pregnant as well?
I will say that's like, you know, they body shame everyone.
Boy, yeah.
We were in a swimming pool in a hotel in Heathrow, and the day we were flying out, we stayed overnight to like have an early morning easier. And we were in the pool, lovely pool, and a big, I think it was Mediterranean. and I'm basing that purely on body hair. But he was a big rotund man. He got in the pool and she just went, look at his big hairy belly. I was like, oh God, come on.
I mean, you were looking at his big hairy belly, though.
I know, yeah. But it's like having a leery drunk mate with you at all times. You just got to apologize for constantly. I'm sorry, but they mean well.
So when I was working at guide dogs, right, I'll tell you a story because this ambassador dog, Calvin.
Fantastic. There is nothing better than a dog with a person's name.
Yes.
Calvin.
Yeah. He used to
Marjorie
get farmed out. Everyone would sort of have to take him for a few weeks or you know whatever. And so we looked after him and got to know Calvin a little bit. And he was very hungry. As a guide dog, this is not ideal. You know, right, they're constantly looking at snacks and wanting things about.
And yeah, this you're going to walk into traffic because there's what he thinks is meat in there.
Yeah. This led to me finding out why he was retired as a guide dog, which was that he went to the shops one day with his owner, and they did the weekly shop. Came home with sausages, came home with like 18 sausages, and the owner puts that up on the counter.
Go on, Calvin.
Goes off to the bathroom. Calvin jumps up on the counter, devours
all 18.
18 sausages.
Yes.
Yes, mate.
The way that his owner finds this out is hours later, the smell of the shit.
Oh, my God.
That
it came out in like a string
all
of sausages.
Through the house.
Oh,
of course.
Which then he has to clean up. Purely on smell.
Oh, God.
Oh, my words. Yes.
And Calvin, Calvin was retired shortly after.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Became the ambassador.
You're a dog owner.
Yeah.
That's genuinely, I'm not a dog owner. I like dogs, but I don't want one.
Have you got a cat?
No, I don't. I'm not. Don't it's like again, anything. It's a weird one. I'm a vegan who. I don't mind animals, but yeah. I don't want one.
You've got a human.
Yeah, but also just I've always had that thing. I'm you know, as much as people assume if you're a vegan, you're an animal lover, and it's not. I don't love them. I just don't want it. I don't want to eat them. Yeah, I mean, I think them two things can sit side by side. But the shit thing is the thing that would just really put me off getting one. Like we're staying with my in-laws who've got a dog.
Yeah,
and when like we take him out for walks, I'll go with my brother-in-law and. He has to pick up like two or three shits en route.
Yeah.
And it's just, that to me is like, I'm never getting a dog because I don't want to pick up shit.
This is why a cat is a real fucking revolution.
Because they'll just shit anywhere. You'll never find out.
You're never going
to
find out.
You got literally, there's one.
Box yeah, you have a litter box, but what he's talking
I don't
about
want
is
a litter
in,
box,
in London, anyone who has
litter
a cat,
box is worse,
it's
though.
An indoor-outdoor cat. I completely disagree because the litter box technology has gotten to the point
but
where...
But where is it, though? Because in the UK, most people put it in the fucking kitchen.
In the UK,
exactly.
It is
you go to the
insane.
Bathroom and there's like a shit sitting
like,
in the corner.
Yeah.
No, you put it in like the room you use the least,
yes.
In a corner, enclosed so the smell doesn't get out. And
right.
The other thing is people in the UK never change... Like, I remember... The amount of people I'd been on like a few dates with and their whole house would smell like cat litter to the point that
God.
I looked it up and it's like, that only happens if you don't, you're supposed to change it out every couple of weeks.
A couple of weeks?
Yeah, like
I thought you were about to say every day.
No, because that's why the litter it absorbs. But people literally leave it for years.
That's worse.
That's great.
Nah,
just
man.
Dump it fucking boom.
Also, I will, why do you have to pick it up if they shit in a park? Surely it's compost.
You ever played soccer?
Huh?
You ever played soccer in a park?
Yeah.
Prefer not to step
I
in
suppose
shit.
There is that, but I just feel in sort of the circle of life, it feels more natural to just leave it
well,
in some grass.
I take Hopkins walking along the creek often, and that there's if she sometimes she does what I call a bush shit, which I feel that's
fine.
That's a free
kick
shit.
It into the bush.
That's
if you're good. Yeah.
Because I feel like as well, it's not surely not great for the planet if she's just shat under the bushes over there where worms and beetles and things are going to get.
And you put it in a bag.
And you put it
and
in
you
a piece
go and
of
put
plastic
it in a
and
yeah.
Put it in landfill.
That's what I always also think. I understand if they do it on a pavement, but I think there should be some system where there's a. Part of the park that just stinks of shit and you just gotta go and throw it there.
But that's the
but
thing
it,
that's
it's compostable.
So this is the thing, that's what I always thought dog parks were, is it's like we're this is the area
it's
don't play soccer here,
it's
fenced
in.
It's
covered in shit and
it's
stinks.
Covered in dog shit. And that's what it was when I was a kid. Now in LA, all the dog parks you still can't shit there. Like some of them are like have a different area for them to shit. I'm like, if it's a place for dogs.
Yes.
Let them go wild, baby.
There's a, in Adelaide, when I was in Adelaide.
It accumulates, that's the issue.
They have some enclosed dog parks that were really cool.
Oh, those, yeah.
I've never seen one before.
Near North Adelaide. They're amazing.
Yeah.
They're huge in Adelaide.
Lovely.
Yeah.
But it's like, obviously, Kai Humphries' friend, comedian.
Of course.
Him and his partner have recently opened a indoor
yes.
soft play for dogs.
Mm. What?
In Glasgow.
There's one near us called Barks and Recreation.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah. It's a reason to buy
a good
dog.
Idea. Basically, it's for, you know, if you've got dogs that, you know, if it's shitting down with rain,
you can't
take your dog out to a park, but you want to run around, you take him to an indoor dog park.
Yeah.
I'm surprised it's not a much more common thing.
I think it is. It is. Yeah, that's right,
it's just like the first I've ever heard of.
It's like one of those
I've done that thing of assuming they never existed until I heard about it.
It's one of those things where, like,
I had a brand new idea with his wife.
I never noticed any daycares in Los Angeles, where I live, until all of my friends started having kids. And then suddenly you're like, Jesus fucking Christ. They're more plentiful than gas stations.
Yeah. Mm. It's like nurseries. Like, I'd never... Yeah, that's not what you... There's a daycare, but in the UK, nurseries are every single... ex-church hall.
Oh my God.
And ex-like social club that has now been shut down. Mm. It's always a nursery.
Are they hard to get in the UK?
Nurseries. Yeah. The very good ones, there's a bit of a waiting list. Like, there's one around the corner from us that is one of the best in the area. And we called up to be like, can we come for a tour? Because we're thinking of putting our daughter in kindergarten in September. And they were like, nah, not even worth it, mate. But we've applied... for a Steiner kindergarten.
Oh, here we fucking go. Yeah, get her hands in the dirt. Oh, you
she's going to be so happy, but dumb as shit.
Yeah.
Man.
She's going to have
those collages. Yeah. Stunning.
Yeah, she'll be able to do, like, you know, handheld geometry drawings, but you know, that's about it. It's great. We went for a tour of the school, and I've been taking her to a Steiner playgroup. And it is lovely. I mean, it is so...
What's a Steiner playgroup?
It's basically...
Isn't the concept of Steiner, you've got the same teacher all the way through?
Well, Steiner is... It's just, you know, if you've got a normal curriculum, which is everyone does just reading numbers here and there, and then you get things like Montessori is a bit more laid back, a bit more Scandinavian.
Mm-hmm.
Steiner is pure, like, everything's neutral colours and wood, and there's no real curriculum as such. It's much more play-led, and it is that thing of, you tend to have the same people guide you through it.
Mm-hmm.
But the playgroup is just almost an introduction to Steiner. So I've been taking my daughter to Steiner playgroup since, like, October.
Mm.
And it is lovely. It's so much more... Compared to other playgroups, you go and there's 50 kids screaming and running around. It's so loud and stressful. And it's full of just nannies with six kids because their parents have got super busy jobs and don't want to partake in the raising of their own children. So I always find them really stressful. But taking her to a Steiner one is so chilled and everyone's just nice. And, you know, it's... I mean, there are parts of it that I find... slightly make me go, like, fucking come on, mate. Like, not everyone has to wear neutral colours. You know what I mean?
Is that a real one?
Well, no, like, there's some of the mums have their... I was going to say some of the other mums, because I'm the only dad who's ever there. But they always dress their kids in, like, you know, just neutral, like, slightly weird clothes.
Linen. And
And it's just like... I get it. You're like signed up to this ethos of, you know, things being much more... traditional and
still
play based.
Still live in London, though.
Yeah, you still live in London, and also you give your kid a bit of colour. You know, kids love colour. So, yeah, I just find that a bit restrictive on their little kids.
Not much Fisher Paykel is sort of muted tones.
What's that?
Like the toys. Or have I got the wrong? Have I got
Fisher Price?
Fisher Price. Oh, Fisher Price is like the colourful plastic. Oh, you wouldn't. I mean, Fisher Price ain't getting through the door at a Steiner playgroup. All that colourful plastic.
I think you'll find it.
You're out, mate.
Not welcome in here to the Steiner school. I remember I knew a kid that went through the Steiner system, and I remember he didn't know what a rectangle was, but he could explain to me how to make bread. And I was just like, I mean, weirdly, I think you're
more
I'm going to be like, I think you're actually going to be all right. Like, that's one of those things where it's like, that's way, if he was like three, I was like,
for
that's
a rectangle, were you like, well, the tin.
No,
4 or 5.
Like, that's it was an interesting one. I also am, like, you know, growing up, you can, like, basically have information inserted in your brain by society that remains. And there was a Montessori school at the end, like, in the neighborhood. So there was a group of Montessori kids, and then there was the rest of us who went to the public school. And I think it was just the batch of kids.
Yeah.
But, like, my mom and my grandmother fucking hate the idea of Montessori. Like, all it, like, the kid decides what he learns. go fuck yourself. Yeah,
but your mum is an academic.
My mum is a professor, so it's coming from a place. But she was proven right by all of the people that went to that Montessori school, made up the raft of kids that when we got to high school either started fires or sold us pot. Like,
there's a job for everyone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, enterprising.
There is no judgment. That river had a lot of dead wood and needed to be burned by a lot of people that now weirdly work pretty high up in the Canadian government or by some people who still just work for the bikers selling drugs.
Yeah, but it is. I mean, there is. I definitely, as a belief system, I think it's. I just think I don't think when you're seven, you shouldn't be fucking stressing about bloody maths and stuff. That seems so early. Come on.
Or like when I was in year nine, I went to a school that's basically a camp.
Yeah.
It's just like a whole year up in the mountains because they're like 13, 14-year-old kids aren't doing anything in the classroom.
No.
Like they're not learnt, like hormones are just running wild.
Yeah, yeah.
What if instead
we send them to the woods?
We let them loose.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it was like every week we went hiking and
that's great.
And like running was a big part of it. Like, and then like Pythag, you know, you're still learning maths, but it's like the angle of that mountain that you can see over there.
See, that's nice.
You can figure that out using the hypotenuse of, I don't know.
I do think a lot of that's very important. I also think that like the Canadian public education system was so, I had dyspraxia and some learning disabilities, and like going through that was such a beautiful insight to the hypocrisy of adults, because like I remember being 14 and a man named Michael Whiteside literally leaned over his desk and went, "I don't believe in learning disabilities. I think you're faking it. And there's nothing you can do to prove that." And my mom was sat next to me and she went, "Did you just say that?" And he went, "Yeah." And she was like, "Cool, I'm going to go tell the principal and have you fired. You're an idiot."
That's mad.
And then literally he was, it then came out as a result, he hadn't been teaching the kids the curriculum. So I was taking another class, and then all of the students he was teaching that year all had to take like 5 standardized tests in 3 days. The grades were disappeared and they were all given a B-.
Nice.
And just, it was never discussed again. Like my friend Paul literally wrote the test and he just wrote out why he feels that math is stupid on the back, and he got the test back. He hadn't answered anything and everyone just got 70%. Like it was like this crazy cover up. So I think as much as like they're in my heart, I'm like, you guys are fucking hippies. And your kids are really fun. I'm actually like, I think that is a better way to approach, because I also think that children shouldn't be around a lot of bitterness that does come out of the education. Teachers are not respected by our governments. They're not respected by society in the same way. The amount they have to fight for, just like, can we be paid enough so I can afford a pen for my
And also, it's that thing of the marking thing is that, like, you know, the fact that you do whatever 9 to 3:30 and you get, and people, because they get holidays off. Everyone's like, "Oh, I'd love to be a teacher. I'd get 6 weeks off in the summer." It's like, yeah, but your job is, you know, you leave the house at 8 and you get home at 4 and then you've got to mark papers all night.
Yeah.
And it's just, and it's a lot. I think the responsibility of a teacher is often the stress of that. Like,
especially new teachers, because they got to build the class, like build the lesson plan. Like when you've been doing it for 20 years, I guess you can reuse lesson plans. Yeah.
It's not like that period of time. Like people that work in an office are always like, "I'd love to do this." What no one tells you about working in an office, which I only found out very recently, is they're not working the whole time. They're working like 3 hours over 8 hours.
When I worked in an office, 3 hours is so generous. Like, I did it for best part of 5 years in an office, and I did so little in that time.
What were you meant to be doing in the office?
Huh?
What were you meant to be doing?
Well, I did accounts. I was in the accounts department of 2 different companies, and in the second one, it was quite high stress accounting, like management accounts and stuff. But like me and all the people I worked with, our work was built around the end of the month. So we would coast for the whole month and then have 4 days of chaos where we were like, so it was just, it was almost like being at school and just cramming for exams.
Yeah.
We took the piss so hard for the rest of the month because we did the accounts and budgeted everything. We used to do this thing where, you know, we'd oversee the budget of each department and like we'd obviously tell them like, "You're coming in under budget this month." So if, like, because it was we had a head office in Italy. And so if you wanted to get that budget again next year, you have to spend your budget. If you come in under budget, they'll cut your budget.
Yeah.
So we used to tell like departments, like, you need to, you know, you've got like thousands in your stationery like budget you ain't going to get next year. So fucking treat yourself to some new chairs, right? And we're like, often as it would come around to the end of the year, they wouldn't have done that. So we would take it on ourselves to spend it. So we had the most pimped out office. Like, like other departments would come down and be like, why have you all got new computers?
Yeah,
so we're like,
yeah,
like it was genuine. And also we had like other departments had entertainment budgets because they had to take clients out. And often they didn't fully spend that. So we would just be like, in December, we would be out having lunches for our department every day, just chucking it on the company card. And we'd be squirreling it off into different departments and just pretending it was their budget.
I actually knew all this without him ever telling me this, which is whenever you go to a new pub in the center of London with Carl, he will always say, I used to come here when I worked in accounts. And at a certain point, I was just like, I think that there was some fraudulent activity.
Oh, my God.
The amount of pubs that he has set, like we have walked in and gone like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. We used to do like, it was mad. We used to have like eating challenges. Just because we had money to spend. We'd be in Chiquitos getting a family meat feast each, seeing if we could just get through it. And like, it was so much fun. But
what
that was
an independent arts company.
Oh, yeah. Let's all go into the arts. Fucking hell.
Yeah.
It was that level of chaos, but no money.
Oh, man. So, yeah. It was hard for 4 days a month. And the rest of the month was just us doing the bare minimum.
There's like a productivity commission in Australia that try and, you know, advise, like, maybe you should do this as a country. And
yeah.
And they've just advised that
is it a 4 day week?
Should go to a 4 day week.
Well, they've done trials and it's shown that productivity often increases.
Yeah.
Because I think if you said to everyone, look, you've got your job you've got now, but you're going to do it in 2 days a week.
Yeah.
Then people would work so hard on them 2 days to relax for five.
Yeah, exactly.
That productivity would not drop.
Yeah, that's
but
what
it's just,
saying.
Yeah, it's that thing with the economy. Everyone would just shit their pants and think it's going to ruin other parts of the economy, which probably there would be effects on, I don't know, hospitality. And things. But not like if you've got 5 nights to go out and get shit faced. Yeah.
Well, because there's like huge now, like, academic and like business debates about this, because the problem is, especially with post-COVID, kind of like made this like light speed happening, but like the office is disappearing. But the problem is that we've built cities that weren't focused on factories before. They're not focused on these office parks.
Yeah.
And the problem is if they all go desolate, it'll just be like any other desolate area
taken over
to whatever. So they're just trying to figure out a way to basically preserve the way our cities are designed in any way possible. And I just, like, for me, I'm just saying, everyone work from home, burn, baby, burn. Let's just have the best skate parks in the world.
I know, It's have so much graffiti
exactly,
everywhere.
Like, I feel like I've really leaned into Southern California hippiedom, where I'm like, release it back to the trees, capitalism
but
is
also,
dead.
It also shows how, like, the sort of brain worms that people have got when it comes to, like, there are so many people, like, a lot of people that are into conspiracy theories are now obsessed that like the new world order, the World Economic Forum, and what they're trying to do is bring in things like the universal basic income, like to basically give everyone money to stay at home and not work, and it's going to destroy the world. And it's like, that sounds great.
Yeah.
Like, that's my, like, they're like, what, do you want to just rely on the government and not work? It's like, that is exactly what I want.
But unfortunately,
I live in a country where that is not possible because the benefits are so low. If I could be on benefits forever and not work, that would be my dream life.
Why do you think that there was so much effort within COVID? Not to be this fucking guy, but I'm very much this fucking guy. Of like so quickly being, it's so fucked up. People are being handed this money because billionaires and oligarchs and giant corporations had to quickly make sure that people weren't like, wait a minute. This is so crazy because no one will give Trump credit for this. We got $1,800, no questions asked, for almost 2 years, and that motherfucker still lost an election. Like, everyone in California was like, this is the best.
Yeah.
No one talk about where it's coming from because this guy's got to go.
Yeah, of course.
Woo!
It's sort of one of those things, like when people congratulate John Howard for the getting rid of the guns in Australia.
Yeah.
I'm always like, yeah, but that is base. That is the lowest level. Like, of course he should have got rid of the guns.
Yeah.
That is the only normal response to a massacre,
which
is what happened in Australia. Similarly, of course you should have got $1,500 or $1,800 or whatever it was. If there was a Democrat in, they would have done that as well.
Of course.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. Yeah. And it's one of those things where I always find
and
that
this is why I don't think you should vote for him.
Well, too bad, I already have.
That's why you should stop trying to push him on podcasts.
Guys. Listen.
Stop.
He's the decider. But it's, again, it's so fucking fascinating. All you're 100% correct on your point. If it's like, it's just the logical thing they're going to do. Like with Canada, I always like there's a, it's always like a stone in my shoe because people are like, oh, Canada legalized gay marriage in 2003. The reason why was that government was getting chucked out because Canada refused to go to the war in Iraq.
Yes.
And the right wing in America rose up. And everyone in Canada was like, fuck you, we have to go to this bloodbath. And the Liberal Party on the way out went, oh, if you already hate us, you're going to fucking hate this. And did that. And no one, everyone remembers that we, the no. And I was like, that was done for spite. That was not done out of good intentions, which, you know, is, but who cares? It still got done. But it's one of those things where I always like, it's always like, in the same way of like, Trump did it.
Yeah.
I wish you was Biden.
Yeah. What happened with gay marriage in the UK was brought in under the Conservatives. Right, yeah. David Cameron brought it in.
Hi, everybody. That's the end of the public episode.
Thanks for listening. Now, if you would like to hear more, you can go over to patreon.com/...
We are TVI. You have to put it in the search bar.
Because we still haven't taken it off adult content.
Because it's triple X.
It's triple, it's dirty. Filthy.
Nice.
Get your willies out when you listen. But yeah, go over to Patreon, sign up. What's the tiers? I can't remember what they're. Three?
We've got £3, £5... 10 and 20.
That's what I mean. The 20 is a joke one. £10 is sort of a joke as well. £3 gets you just all the back catalogue, extra episodes, and
hours and hours. Hours.
I mean, there's I don't know how I'm 100
hours
extra sort of episodes. And the £5 tier, you get all that as well. But you also, if you wish, get to join the TVI WhatsApp group. And
you can also see the full episode or listen to the full episode with a £3 tier.
Yeah. So
£5 gets you the WhatsApp group.
Yeah. Excellent. That's it. That's all you need to know. Get over to Patreon if you want more.
Thanks for listening.
Otherwise, just thanks for listening to the public episode. And we'll
please like and share.
Yeah, give it a share, mate. Tell your friends. Tell your families. Tell your kids. Bye.
Love you.
Nick used to die of AIDS in an alleyway.